Benedict is now back in the Vatican after concluding his week-long pilgrimage to the Holy Land that took him in turn to Jordan, Israel and the Palestinian territories. Billed in advance by many in the press as his most difficult and delicate overseas visit yet, Pope Benedict described himself as a pilgrim of peace during his trip to the troubled Middle East region. It was a pilgrimage where he visited sites sacred to all three monotheistic religions, where he paid homage to the victims of the Holocaust, and where he said Palestinians have the right to a sovereign state. Joan Lewis is our regular Vatican watcher, who went to the Holy Land to cover the Pope's pilgrimage there. Before she left Jerusalem, I asked Joan to share her impressions with us and describe what, for her, were the highlights of this just-concluded papal trip.
Well, I am sure that the Vatican side is extremely pleased with the visit. And when you think of the complexity of it, not only the physical elements of traveling here and there, the many movements that the Pope had each day, but added to that the complexity of the picture, in the sense the political, if you will, and the religious, the Pope addressing Muslims, the Pope addressing Jews, the Pope speaking obviously to Catholics and to Christians in each of his stops. So there's different audiences that he has, and in a way, different messages, even though the common thread through many of his talks was the situation here in the Middle East. You've got the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that has been ongoing for decades and for many generations of people. So there were so many salient moments. You'd almost have to divide it into the purely religious, such as the Mass in Nazareth on Thursday and the blessing of stones for a new family center in Nazareth and so forth. Those spiritual moments were something. And then, of course, is the political. Not political. Well, when he went to Yad Vashem, there's just this is a huge tapestry. And I would just say that the common thread running through it would have to be really probably the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the Middle East situation. But there were so many wonderful moments, Susie.
And as you said, it was a very packed agenda. If you could have to sort of sum up, what were some of the highlights for you, the two or three moments stood out for you?
Oh, personally, I have to say for me, and if I read the Holy Father's face correctly, back to Jordan, Mount Nebo was absolutely unforgettable. It was extremely beautiful in its setting. This is where Moses was to have been given the view of the promised land by God, and then he died on Monte Nebo and is said to have been buried there by God himself. No one knows where or has discovered a tomb. But this very isolated, very beautiful spot, there was just a sense of the surreal almost on Mount Nebo, and you could tell how much the Holy Father enjoyed it. And when he stood out on that precipice overlooking what was the promised land, it was an awesome moment. And there was silence, and then all the journalists asked the Pope to bless him. And then fast forward a few days to Bethlehem, where of course I had spent 10 days at Christmas. I knew pastors from Beit Sahor, Beit Jala, Bethlehem, and so forth. It was quite extraordinary. And I was in the piazza, in Major Square, not the piazza, before Mass, and I was looking for a lot of those friends because I knew they were going to be at the papal Mass. And I saw this one priest, and I thought, I wonder if he knows where the group is from Gaza that was allowed to come in to the Mass. And I found out that he was the parish priest from Gaza. He's only been there a month. His name is Father Jorge Hernandez. There are 250 Catholics in the Holy Family Parish in Gaza, but only 48 of them were given permission to come, including two nuns from Mother Teresa's, the Missionaries of Charity. I spoke to them at length. They run a school, a kindergarten for 125 little kids, and they also run a home for senior citizens. And they don't have much life. This is what they told me. They don't have much. Life is very simple. Obviously, they're trying to rebuild and so forth. But she said, you know, when you don't have something, when you're not used to having something, you don't miss it. You don't know you don't have it. And Father Hernandez, Father Jorge, told me that the He said, of course, he was terribly sorry that all 250 people couldn't come to the papal mass in Manger Square on Wednesday. Anyway, Father said that rebuilding is going on, but the main difficulty, they get a lot of aid. It's mostly humanitarian in Gaza, but they have a problem getting things like cement and bricks, the things you need to actually rebuild. So it doesn't care, you know, if you have $10 million, but you can't buy cement and steel and stuff, then you can't rebuild. So that was a moment. And I have to say, though I wasn't there at Yad Vashem, we did watch it at the Media Center in Jerusalem, which, by the way, is very interesting. It's the sixth floor of the very beautiful City Hall. So we watched it on closed-circuit television, the Yad Vashem. And I have to say, the impression was humongous among the journalists watching the Holy Father. A number of us said, my word, he looks like he's going to cry. He looked deeply, profoundly moved and almost anguished, really.
And yet there were certain people, as you well know, in the Israeli press who said that he seemed cold and detached.
Well, you know, Susie, you and I know the Holy Father. We knew him as Cardinal Ratzinger. And I have to tell you, maybe you have to know him to know his expression. He's a profoundly intellectual person who knows how to listen. Sometimes when he looks serious and unmoved, it's because he's listening. And of course, here he's listening to how many different languages? My word, any one of the liturgies and so forth. In some instances, there have been translators of things people said. In others, there have not been translations into the English. Yeah, the Israeli, I think it was the Knesset speaker who said there was not enough personal contrition. And I mean, it's like, heaven help us. This is a German man who now, as a priest told me, says he's no longer a German. He's a Roman. He's the Roman pontiff. And you can't do away with his history of being born in Germany, a country which would later, when he was in his early teens, would send so many Jews to their death. He was not responsible for that. He suffered for that. His whole family suffered for that. If you spoke out against what the Nazis did, you could find yourselves in a camp. So the fact that they wanted him to apologize personally, if they'd really thought about it, he was not going to apologize for being a German and for what his country did when he was, what, 12 or 14 years old, and he couldn't do anything about it. So that was a little upsetting to a lot of us who cover the Vatican, who know the Holy Father, who know his sentiments, his honesty. He has this huge intellectual honesty, and I think it's reflected in all of his speeches and discourses that he's made here, every one, short or small, short or long, I mean.
Coming down to the speeches he made there during this trip. As far as the Palestinians are concerned, of course, he called for the wall or the security barrier to come down. He supported their right for an independent state. How well did this go down with Palestinians? Did you get any feedback there?
I'm looking here, and they're in Italian right now, at the Palestinian press. Obviously, I mean, this was like the best thing that ever happened. And think about it, Susie. They had the world looking at them for one entire day. So when the Pope said Mass, when he went to the refugee camp, any time he opened his mouth, really, in Bethlehem, the world was looking at him. And so you've got, for example, one headline, the Pope greets the crowd at the refugee camp at Aida in Bethlehem, and in the background is the racist wall, another Palestinian title. The Holy Father is disillusioned with this. I'm just translating quickly.
Disappointed.
With this wall. Disappointed. Oh, in this wall, thank you, which he defines tragic and which obviously separates the West Bank. Benedict XVI hopes for the creation of a sovereign Palestinian nation. His plane landed, and he's asking for two states. He's saying there has to be, you know, two peoples, two sovereign states with internationally recognized and secure borders. But you know what? None of this is new. Read what Pope John Paul II said. Read other times when Benedict has spoken on this. Now, interestingly enough, you had the Muslim and the Palestinian press giving excellent coverage to this. And then on the Israeli side, it was very interesting. Very little was said. Some of the papers just had a photo of the Holy Father, maybe with the separation wall, and then one line underneath. Some didn't have any articles at all.
Joan, I know that you've, been to the Holy Land a number of times in the past, and I read some reports saying that it's It's changed, of course, since when Pope John Paul was there. It's a more somber, it's a sadder place. Mm-hmm. Did you feel
exactly.
that yourself?
Oh, no, not at the papal events. I didn't, to be very honest with you. I mean, these people who've been waiting so long, the last time any pope came here was 2000. See, you have to look at the framework within which John Paul came in 2000. It looked like we were really closer to peace than we'd ever been here. The barometer was just, you know, all going the right direction. And everything has changed. Benedict is coming in a climate of huge conflict and rockets coming out of Gaza into southern Israel and the shelling of the Palestinians in Gaza and so forth. So the climate is vastly, vastly different. Now, if I were to sit in a cafe somewhere and interview different people and say, hey, tell me the real, you know, situation, I don't think that would be any different from what we've been reading in the papers over the last months. Is there joy and hope? That's what has stood out in my mind. Joy at having the Pope there. And if I had to say two words, I would say hope and encouragement. For the Christians, for the Christian Palestinians, the Pope gave them a sense of hope. And he did encourage them, stay here, because they're leaving the Holy Land in unbelievable numbers. Just looking at Bethlehem alone, if you look at the bleeding out of the Christians, it's just absolutely phenomenal.
I know it's perhaps a bit early, but what do you think could be the lasting legacy of this pilgrimage to the Holy Land by Pope Benedict?
Well, if he's done two things, it will be considered a success. If the Christians truly remain, the Christians here in the Holy Land, remain more filled with hope and encouragement and do stay because of what he said, that would be a very good thing. Politically, if he makes a few leaders sit up and look more deeply at some of the problematic areas, to forget past injuries and past words and work on building a lasting peace for the good of everyone. If I just went through the page by page, the booklet of the entire papal trip, it's been extraordinarily rich in words, actions, deeds, history. I just cannot tell you this enormously beautiful tapestry that has been woven day by day here in the Holy Land.
I was speaking there to Joan Lewis in Jerusalem.